Chapter 4 The two of them trudged through the closed-up slum business district, neither having much to say. Presently, dark stores gave way to houses and apartment buildings. The houses were old.
"This is the colored section," Tweeny said.
Marianne nodded. Her emotion had waned. Now she felt tired.
"I live in the colored section," Tweeny said.
"No kidding." He glanced curiously at her.
"Don't you ever take it easy, Miss Marianne?"
"I'll take it easy," she said, "when I'm good and ready." He laughed loudly.
"I never met anybody like you."
Now that they had left the Wren, some of his formality was eroding. An expansiveness replaced it. Roaming along the deserted evening sidewalk, Tweeny began to enjoy himself.
"You love music, don't you?" he said.
She shrugged. "Sure."
"There has been some conflict between I and Nitz. He prefers to play the usual line of popular jazz. As you've probably noticed, it's my desire to bring in a more refined musical form."
Marianne listened without really hearing the man's words. His deep voice reassured her. It dissipated some of her uneasiness, and that was enough. The presence of Negroes had always lulled her. In the Negro world, there seemed more warmth and less of the struggle she had known at home. She had always been able to talk to Negroes. They were like herself. They, too, were on the outside, in a separate world of their own. "You can't go a lot of places either," she said aloud.
"What's that?"
"But you have so much ability. How does it feel to be able to sing? I wish I could do something like that." She remembered the ad tucked away in her purse, and her restlessness increased. "Did you study somewhere, some school?"
"At the conservatory," Tweeny said. "My ability was noted at an early age."
"Did you belong to the Baptist church, too?" Tweeny laughed tolerantly.
"No, of course not."
"Where were you born?"
"Here in California. I've made California my permanent home. California is a rich state. It has boundless possibilities."
To certify his point, he indicated his coat sleeve.
"This suit was tailored for me personally, designed and fitted by an expert firm in Los Angeles."
His fingers strolled over his silk hand-painted necktie.
"Clothes are important."
"Why?"
"People can tell you have taste. Clothes are the first thing people notice. As a woman, you must be aware of that."
"I suppose so." But she didn't care. Clothes to her were a civic duty interwoven with cleanliness and posture.
"It's a nice evening," Tweeny observed.
He had got around to the street side of her, a gesture of gentlemanly alertness.
"We have excellent weather here in California."
"Have you been in other states?"
"Of course."
Marianne said, "I wish I could travel."
"When you've seen the various big cities, you'll know one fundamental thing. They're all alike."
She accepted his words, but the longing was untouched. "I'd like to go somewhere, to some better place." That was the most she could summon. The idea was no clearer. "What would be a better place? Name a real nice place where the people are nice."
"New York has its charms."
"Are people nice there?"
"New York has some of the finest museums and opera houses in the world. The people are cultured."
"I see." Guiding the girl from the pavement, Tweeny said,
"This is it. My house."
His expansiveness soured as the old house loomed up before them.
"Not much to look at, but good music lacks commercial appeal. Person has to choose between riches and artistic integrity."
A dark outside staircase led from the yard to the third floor. Marianne felt her way through the gloom. Ahead of her was Tweeny, and to her left was the house itself. A rain barrel glided by. It was filled with soaked and decomposing newspapers. Next came a line of rusting oil drums, and then the steps. Under her feet, the wood groaned and gave. She clung to the banister and stayed close behind Tweeny. The apartment was a blur of shadows as Tweeny led her down the hall to the kitchen. She gazed around her in wonder. She was seeing a vast clutter of furniture and shapes, nothing distinct, nothing she could properly make out. And then the light was on.
"Excuse things," Tweeny murmured.
He left her standing in the kitchen as he prowled, tomcat-wise, from room to room. His possessions seemed to be safe. Nobody had stolen his shirts. Nobody had ruffled his drapes. Nobody had drunk his whiskey. In the kitchen, a slight pool of water shone. The linoleum was damp with evidence of the catastrophe. But the heater had been repaired and the mess mopped up.
"Fine," Tweeny said. "They did a good job."
Subdued, aware now that her alarm had been wasted, Marianne padded here and there, examining bookcases, peering out of windows. The apartment was very high up. She could see across town. Along the horizon ran a series of clear yellow lights. "What's those lights?" she asked Tweeny. He was indifferent. "A road, maybe." Marianne breathed in the faintly musty scent of the apartment. "You have an interesting place. I've never seen a place like this. I'm still living at home with my parents. This gives me a lot of ideas for my own pad, you know?" Lighting a cigarette, Tweeny said, "Well, I was right. I guess the plumber came. Nothing was the matter after all." "I'm sorry," she said, feeling uncertain of herself. "I was thinking about the people downstairs. I read an ad once, an insurance company ad about a hot water heater that exploded."
"Might as well take off your coat now that you're here."
She did so, pushing it over the arm of a chair. "I guess I got you away from the Wren for nothing." Hands in the back pockets of her jeans, she returned to the window.
"Beer?"
"Okay," she nodded. "Thanks."
"Eastern beer." Tweeny filled a glass for her. "Sit down."
She sat, holding the glass awkwardly. It was cold and damp, with drops of collected moisture.
"You don't even know if there are any people downstairs," Tweeny said.
He had made a point, and he intended to develop it.
"What makes you think there's somebody downstairs?"
Staring at the floor, Marianne murmured, "I don't know, I just thought about it." Tweeny settled himself on the edge of a heaped table. He was now located well above her, in a position of authority. The girl seemed quite small in comparison to him, and quite young. In her jeans and cotton shirt, she might have been a teenager.
"How old are you?" Tweeny demanded.
Her lips barely moved. 20.
"You're just a little girl."
It was so. She felt like a little girl, too. She could sense his eyes fastened mockingly on her. She was, she realized, about to undergo the ordeal of a lecture. She was going to be reprimanded.
"You got to grow up," Tweeny said. "You got a lot of things to learn."
Marianne roused herself. "For Christ's sake, don't I know it? I want to learn things."
"You live here in town?"
"Naturally," she said with bitterness.
"You go to school?"
"No. I work in a lousy, broken-down chrome furniture factory."
"Doing what?"
"Stenographer."
"Do you like it?"
"No." Tweeny contemplated her.
"Do you have talent?"
"What do you mean?"
"You should do something creative."
"I just want to go somewhere where I can be with people and they won't let me down." Tweeny went over and turned on the radio. The sound of Sarah Vaughan drifted out and into the living room.
"You've been dealt some hard knocks," he said, returning to his vantage point.
"I don't know. I haven't had it so bad." She sipped her beer. "Why does Eastern beer cost more than Western?"
"Because it's finer."
"I thought maybe it was the freight cost."
"Did you?"
His great contemptuous grin reappeared. "See, I've never had a chance to find things out. Where do you find out things like that?"
"A lifetime of broad experience. A cultivated taste is acquired gradually over the years. To some people, Eastern beer and Western beer taste exactly alike."
Marianne didn't like beer of any kind. Dutifully, she sipped at her glass, wishing in a wan sort of way that she was older, that she had seen more and done more. She was aware of her ordinariness in comparison with Carlton Tweeny. "How does it feel to be a singer?" she asked.
"In art," Tweeny told her, "there's a spiritual satisfaction that goes beyond material success. The American society is only interested in money. It's shallow."
"Sing something for me," Marianne said suddenly. "I mean," she murmured, "I like to hear you."
"Such as?"
He raised an eyebrow. "Sing Water Boy," she smiled at him. "I like that. You sang it at the Wren one night."
"It's a favorite of yours, then?"
"We sang it once in grammar school assembly years ago." Her thoughts eddied back to her earlier life, when she, in Scotch plaid skirt and midi blouse, had trooped as part of an obedient line from one classroom to another. Crayon drawings, current events, air raid drills during the war. "That was better," she decided, "during the war. Why isn't it like that now?"
"What war?"
"With the Nazis and the Japs. Were you in that?"
"I served in the Pacific."
"Doing what?" she was instantly curious.
"Hospital attendant."
"Is it fun to work in a hospital? How'd you get to do it?"
"I signed up."
His activity in the war had never ranked high in his own estimation. He had come out as he had gone in, a private earning $21 a month. How do you get to be a nurse? She asked.
You take courses like anything else.
Marianne's face glowed. It must be wonderful to be able to devote your life to something real and important, a cause like nursing.
Distastefully, Tweeny said, bathing old, dried-up men. There's no fun in that.
Marianne's interest waned. No, she agreed, sharing his aversion. I wouldn't like that. But it wouldn't be that all the time, would it? Mostly it would be healing people.
What was so fine about the war, Tweeny said. You never seen a war, young lady. You never seen a man get killed. I've seen that. War's an awful business.
She didn't mean that, of course. She meant the unanimity that had arisen during the war, the evaporation of internal hostility. My grandfather died in 1940, she said aloud. He used to keep a map of the war, a big wall map. He stuck pins in it.
Yes, Tweeny agreed, unmoved.
But she was greatly moved, because Grandfather Reynolds had been a vast and important person to her. He had taken care of her. He used to explain to me about Munich and the Czechs, she said. He loved the Czechs. Then he died. I was 7 years old.
Very young, Tweeny murmured.
Grandfather Reynolds had loved the Czechs, and she had loved him, and perhaps he was the only human being she had ever had real affection for. Her father was a danger, not a person. Since one certain night when she had come home late, and he in the living room had caught her, had really caught her, not in a game. Since that night she had been afraid, and he, the grinning little man, knew it and enjoyed it. Ed was working in a defense plant in San Jose, she said, but my grandfather was home. He was old. He used to own a ranch in the Sacramento Valley, and he was tall. She felt herself drifting, falling away into her own thoughts. I remember that. He used to lift me up and swing me around a long way off the ground. He was too old to drive. When he was a boy, he rode on a horse. Her eyes shone, and he wore a vest and a big silver ring he bought from an Indian. Getting to his feet, Tweeny walked around the apartment, pulling down the window shades. He leaned over Marianne to reach the window behind her. He smelled of beer and shirt starch and men's deodorant.
You're a nice-looking girl.
She roused herself a little. I'm too thin.
You're not a bad-looking girl, he repeated, looking down at her legs.
Instinctively, she drew them under her.
Do you know that?
He demanded in an oddly hoarse voice. Maybe. She stirred fitfully. It was getting late. Tomorrow morning she had to be up early. She had to be alert and fresh when she went to see about the ad. Thinking of it, she took hold of her purse.
You a friend of Nitz's? Tweeny asked.
I suppose.
You like him?
He settled himself facing her, his body slack.
You like Nitz? Answer me.
He's all right, she said, feeling uncomfortable.
He's little. The man's eyes were full of brightness. I bet you prefer your men large.
No, she said irritably, I don't care. Her head had begun to ache, and Tweeny's closeness seemed oppressive, and she hated his beer smell. It reminded her of Ed. Why don't you clean this place up, she demanded, shifting away from him. It's an awful mess, junk everywhere. He sat back, and his face collapsed into itself. It's terrible. She got to her feet and collected her coat, her purse. The apartment was no longer interesting. She blamed him for spoiling it. It stinks, she said, and it's all littered, and I'll bet the wiring is bad.
Yes, Tweeny said, the wiring is bad.
Why don't you have it fixed? It's dangerous. Tweeny said nothing. Who cleans up, she demanded. Why don't you have somebody come in?
I have a woman come by.
When?
Once in a while.
He examined his jeweled wristwatch.
It's time we were getting back, Miss Marianne.
I suppose. I have to be up early tomorrow. She watched him go to get his coat. He had withdrawn back into his shell of formality, and it was her fault. I'm glad your hot water heater is okay, she said, as a sort of apology.
Thank you.
As they walked down the dark night street, Marianne said, tomorrow I'm going job hunting.
Are you?
I want to work in a record shop. She felt his disinterest, and she wanted to draw him back. It's that new one that's opening. In the late air, she trembled.
What's the matter?
My sinuses. I'm supposed to go down and have them drained. Changes of temperature make them hurt.
Will you be all right?
He asked. They had come to the edge of the business section. Ahead, along the street of locked shops, she could see the red glow of the Wren. "Yes," she said. "I'm going home and go to bed."
"Good night," Tweeny said, and started away.
"Wish me luck," she called after him, suddenly feeling the need of luck. Loneliness closed in, and she had to force herself not to flee after him. Tweeny waved and continued on his way. For a moment she stood anxiously watching the diminution of his figure. Then, holding on to her purse, she turned toward her own neighborhood.